You're listening to Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas with an emphasis on homeopathy.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the 100th episode of Mom and Doc Talk. We are so happy to have you here. And I have to tell you guys, my heart is so full right now. Like I'm excited, legitimately excited for every guest we have, but like I'm about to start crying with like how full my heart is for the guests that we have today. This is an indulgent episode, I'm not gonna lie. This is not a Pans and Pandas episode, but this is an important episode because we are joined by the man who, if he didn't exist, none of this would exist. And so I am very honored to introduce you all to my mentor, my teacher, Dr. Stephen Messer. I'm going to tell you a little bit about him, and then I'm going to tell you a little bit about me and the impact he's had on my life before we let him talk about himself. So Dr. Stephen Messer holds a master's degree in science education from the University of Pennsylvania and a doctor of naturopathic medicine from NCNM, now called NUNM, or National University of Natural Medicine. He is a founder and past president of the Homeopathic Academy of Naturopathic Physicians. He served on the board of directors for the National Center of Homeopathy and as the dean of its prestigious summer school. In 2000, after 21 years of practice in Oregon, he relocated to Arizona and the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine as professor and chair of homeopathic medicine, where he instructed both in the classroom and clinic and supervised homeopathic provings and clinical trial research. He has received various national awards, including the NCH's Henry Williams Professional Service Award and the Julian Winston NCH Service Award. And in 2023, the AAMP, or American Association of Naturopathic Physicians, awarded him the prestigious Louisa and Benedict Lust Lifetime Award, but he considers his greatest accomplishment the large number of ND graduates whom he has had the privilege to train, both in the classroom and in the clinic, who are now among the vanguard of physicians, bringing about a resurgence of excellent homeopathic practice in North America. Dr. Messer, we are so happy to have you here with us. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you, Jen. It's wonderful to be here.
So as I said, I'm just, the reality is this would not exist if it weren't for the work that you've done. You weren't my doctor, but you trained the doctor who helped me to see that homeopathy was not quack medicine. It was like legitimate form of medicine, helped me get off of medications that I couldn't have had my daughter if it weren't for. So the fact that my daughter exists is because of the work that you've done. The fact that this practice exists is because of the work you've done. And all of the people who are clients of Resilience Naturopathic, literally thousands of people that are living better lives because of the work that you've done. And we're just a small group of the people who've had that impact on. But the truth of the matter is, all of the good things in my life are because of you and the work you've done. And so there's no way I could have gotten to 100 episodes of this podcast and not taken the opportunity to honor you and the impact that you've had on so many lives.
Oh my. Thank you, Jen. That's the best introduction I've ever had.
Dr. Messer, I was fortunate to meet you in Arizona and get to share with you a little bit about my feelings about the impact that you've had on so many families' lives through your teaching and your love and your passion of homeopathy. And so again, I'm super, super grateful that the ripple effect that you have had on so many families is enormous, beyond what moms really can get a grasp of. And really, I want to take it, and I know this is going to make you uncomfortable because I know that you are very humble and you don't love talking about you. I am fortunate enough that I have heard Dr. Barr talk about you over the years, so I know a little bit about you. But really, I know moms in our group, in our community, and dads don't know exactly who you are. So I wanted to give them a little bit of an idea of who you are, but through the viewpoint of the providers at our practice. So we're going to gush about you for a minute, and then we'll get into some conversation, if that's okay with you.
Well, I guess I have no choice.
No, we tricked you. We got you here. So Dr. Rudvogt shared, "I'm weeping as I write this. Dr. Messer, you are the reason I practice homeopathy. You taught me so much about being a good doctor and homeopath, and I'm forever grateful for you. I'll always remember the time I cried in front of everyone on shift, the first time you told me I took a great case. Thank you for being an inspiration to me and so many others." Dr. Manter shared, "Oh boy, this was really hard for me. There's not a single person on this earth who has had a bigger impact on my life in the last 20 years, both personally and professionally. I would not be who or where I am today if it weren't for Dr. Messer. I am eternally grateful for him. Distilling lessons down was tough, but a few that stand out. One, he started us... I'm sorry, he taught us the fundamentals of homeopathy and clinical application, but also gave us a deep respect for the philosophy and history that underpins homeopathy. He taught us not only to be doctors, but scholars, and to always keep learning. And two, he taught us and modeled doctoring with humility and humanity. He taught us to see cases with the greatest compassion and to view clients or patients as partners in the healing process. He showed us that there is strength and virtue in transparency, humility, and admitting if you don't know the answer to something. And we still default to talking about cases with respect to the flowchart."
I'm going to jump in just to give Jody a break, because we got people just want to say so many things about you. And I want to make sure that all of our providers' experiences are shared. So Dr. Carillon said, "Dr. Messer was not only instrumental in my burgeoning love of homeopathy as a medical student, but also in my ability to become a naturopathic doctor in general. When I interviewed at what was then Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine, I was really unsure that being an ND was the right career path for me. But after returning from my trip to Arizona to see the school and interview with a few doctors, Dr. Messer conducted my final entrance interview and apparently approved me. He was actually the gatekeeper for my admittance to SCNM, and his kindness and knowledge about natural medicine helped me know that I was in the right place. I was so drawn to homeopathy from the beginning, and Dr. Messer is such a charismatic and knowledgeable teacher that I knew I needed to learn more from him. I sat in on extra rotations with Dr. Messer as a third-year student and loved what I was learning and seeing. It was on my very first rotation with Dr. Messer that I saw a young woman with extreme tachycardia and fainting episodes. She was taking a chance on our homeopathic rotation to see if homeopathy could help her, as her only other option at that time, according to her cardiologist, was ablation, scarring of heart tissue to treat irregular heart rhythms, and surgery. In less than a month of using her recommended homeopathic remedy, she had returned to a completely normal heart rate with no fainting episodes, and the depression and anxiety that she'd reported were nearly gone. This is but one example of many from the homeopathic rotations that blew my mind. From that point on, I was always on a homeopathic rotation until I finished medical school. Instead of studying all the ologies, neurology, gastroenterology, rheumatology, etc., and don't get me wrong, I did study them, all I wanted to do was read the Materia Medica and Hahnemann's philosophical writings. In addition, Dr. Messer was my own doctor for a year or so while I was in school, and he helped me get through a challenging time of getting off anxiety medications when I found out that I was pregnant. With his help and homeopathic recommendations, I was able to have a healthy pregnancy and a healthy baby girl to boot. That baby girl is now a thriving 16-year-old. I owe Dr. Messer a debt of gratitude, as he connected me with the master homeopaths of late and gave me the skills I needed to effectively and efficiently help so many others. And as my own doctor for a bit, he helped me have a healthy pregnancy. For all of this, I'm so incredibly grateful."
Dr. Zerinsky shared, "Dr. Messer is a big part of why I chose to attend Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine. From the start of school, I looked forward to all his lectures and took advantage of any opportunity to sit in on clinical shifts in addition to my scheduled rotations. In addition to his depth of knowledge with homeopathy, I appreciated Dr. Messer's quick wit and calm, confident demeanor. I have found memories of time spent with Dr. Messer and look forward to, I'm sorry, I have fond memories of time spent with Dr. Messer and look forward to any time I'm able to see him."
Dr. Jessica Moore says, "Dr. Messer was probably my most influential teacher. While he taught me how to be a good doctor and teacher, and while his teaching inspired my career in homeopathy, my favorite and most meaningful lessons as his student were about integrity and authenticity. Fail until you succeed. Be transparent. Be present. Stay in integrity with your healthy boundaries. These were foundational for my client care, but also for my happiest life."
Dr. Tapia shared, "What to say about Dr. Messer? There are so many nice things about him. I don't know where to start. He's very caring, direct, honest individual. He really wants his students to learn, and I still remember part one and part two workups we had on his rotations. He involved every student on cases, and we all learned together. He took the time to teach and point out where we could improve and grow. His love and passion for homeopathy rubbed off on me quickly. I was hooked from the very first rotation and have been learning and using homeopathy ever since. Thank you, Dr. Messer, for all your care, guidance, and dedication in teaching us.
And last, but definitely not least, from Dr. Katie Rowling, my gratitude for Dr. Messer is so great that it's hard to distill it down, but here are a few things. RN, Resilience Naturopathic, as we know and love it, wouldn't exist without him because he made a homeopathy understandable and legitimized it for us in school. He made Jen a believer. Did you know that I almost quit naturopathic school because of homeopathy, Dr. Messer? Did you know?
Yes, I do.
I thought you knew that. He didn't teach us homeopathy. He taught us how to learn homeopathy. He taught the roots, the real principles that let us become good homeopaths, because you can never learn all that in 4 years. Then, as importantly or more importantly, he taught us to be doctors. He emphasized the need to understand the human body and medicine in order to do good homeopathy. And most importantly, he taught us that knowing remedies, knowing homeopathy, and knowing medicine isn't enough. You have to know how to be with people, how to relate to people and motivate people. Meditation is a consistent part of Dr. Messer's life, and he taught and modeled what is now at the true essence of RN, Resilience Naturopathic, that intangible thing that makes a client feel like their provider gets them, hears them. He modeled holding space for the client, eliminating the noise, and seeing to the heart of the matter by being present. If you spent any time observing him with his patients, you can picture him exactly how he sits forward, hands between his knees, head cocked to the side, brow furrowed, deeply listening to the person in front of him. He taught us to always believe the client. Ask questions, probe, get to the root of the matter, but believe the client's experience. Isn't that the number one thing a PANS parent needs? If all conventional providers had been taught how to doctor by Dr. Messer, imagine the difference we'd see for the PANS community and many other rare disease communities. So that's why we invited him, guys. That's why we had to have this man join us for our 100th episode, because truly without him, none of us would be here. So Dr. Messer, thank you for indulging us in something that I'm sure was really uncomfortable, but there's enough people who really clearly value you and feel like they're changed because of their interaction with you that we had to share it with you.
Okay. That is very hard to hear. I mean, it's wonderful to hear.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Well, thanks. So let's go ahead and dive in then. Tell us a little bit about yourself from your own words.
What would you like to know? I mean, there are so many different selves we have, you know,
mm-hmm.
made up of different selves. And there's my professional self, which we were mm-hmm. talking about. Is that what you want to know about? Or
I want to know about you. Tell us about which are your top three selves, maybe, or okay. whatever you're willing to share with us.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, I grew up in inner city, New York City, in the South Bronx, for people who know about that. Really dangerous, difficult place to grow up, to be a young person. Mm-hmm. And wanted to do something helpful for people in my life, and had the inspiration to go into medicine, and then had the realization that I didn't think conventional medicine was what was really going to work for me. I thought there was more. Had a lot of health issues in my own family, and I got to see how the pros and the cons of what counted mm-hmm. for medicine, and so I moved on to do something different, which was naturopathic medicine, which was never, I mean, not anything we really even heard about much. It's very different now. You know, mm-hmm. so many NDs now, and so many states that are licensed, and that wasn't the case for naturopathy back when I got into it. And I was fortunate to, you know, not be kicked out of my family for taking this weird, you know, route. You know, that they were very supportive. And then I found out about homeopathy, and so that's how that all started. I mean, in terms of professional stuff, I'm, you know, a professor emeritus at the school, and And I still mentor one resident, and but I'm not teaching really. And but I still talk to lots of my graduates. They have questions and they call, and so that's a little bit about me. I don't know, there's a lot I could talk about, but I don't want to talk about it. Me, I told you. Or I don't like talking about myself.
Well, we want to talk about you.
So
Well, tell us a little bit about how you first learned about naturopathic medicine and homeopathy.
well, naturopathic medicine and homeopathy were kind of combined. I had been a teacher. When I decided I didn't want to go into allopathic medicine, I was thinking actually of becoming a veterinarian, but then I realized that that was conventional medicine also, and so I didn't know what to do with myself, and I had moved to Philadelphia, and I was taking classes at Penn to try to have, be better applicant for the vet program, but now I wasn't going to do it, and so I was walking through the halls, and I saw a sign that said, science graduate, because I have a master's in science education in science. I mean, a bachelor's, a dual bachelor's. One of my majors was biology. science graduate, don't know what to do with your life? Call this number. And I thought, hey, that's me. I just gave up on what I was going to do. So I called the number, and it was for the master's in science education at the University of Pennsylvania. And I thought, okay, I don't know what I'm going to do. My mom was a teacher. I thought teaching seemed like a nice thing to do. And so I took that course, that program, and got my master's in science education. But I taught for a while. I taught middle school, I taught high school biology. I think I was a little too radical for that thing. There was a book in the feminist movement that was brand new. It was called Our Bodies, Ourselves. And I would buy 20 copies and hand them out for free to the young women. Because I was in working in the inner city and in Philadelphia. And a lot of them were going to get pregnant and end up ruining their lives. And I thought it would be good to learn more about that. I just felt like I was a good teacher. They thought I was a great teacher, but I just felt like it wasn't what I really was meant to do. And one night, literally, I had started meditating, and I had left a long-term relationship, and I had met now my now present wife, almost of 50 years. And I was spending the night there with her, and I woke up in the middle of the night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, sat bolt upright, knowing I wanted to be a naturopathic doctor. And I turned to her and I said, hey, and I thought there was only one naturopathic medical school. It was in Portland, Oregon, but it had been in Seattle. And I thought it was in Seattle. So I said to her, hey, you want to move to Seattle? And she said, it's the middle of the night, go back to sleep. And I decided to go. I was so inspired with the idea that I could be a doctor that did something different, that did something natural. And I didn't know, as much about it. So maybe if I had learned more, because it was kind of rough in those days, maybe I wouldn't have gone, but I did go. And there were a lot of adventures there, but we don't have time for that, I don't think. But someday you'd be interested to hear some of that. And when I got to naturopathic medical school, there was one teacher and one of my fellow students who were really, really into homeopathy. And they were both very charismatic people. And they would talk about it in the classroom. When we had a break or something, they would chat with each other. And I didn't know anything about it. And I thought I was going to be involved in nutrition and lifestyle kinds of stuff. And I kept listening. And I thought, well, what is this? So I bought some books. Kent's lectures on philosophy and some other books, probably Margaret Tyler or something like that, and or Dorothy Shepherd, probably Dorothy Shepherd. And I started reading it, and I was like blown away. I was blown away, number one, at what they were claiming they could do, this sort of seemed like magic and it seemed ridiculous. It like you had the experience, Jen. And also I felt like it was like I knew what they were talking about. It was, for a lot of people, homeopathy is a huge leap. And it's very difficult, and the concepts are counterintuitive for sure. And they weren't for me. As soon as I read it, I was like, oh, this makes complete sense. I understand this completely. It's as if I had read it before. And so I just started learning more and more and more. And there was a group of us that were really interested in homeopathy, and we made that happen a lot. And I kept studying, and that was it. That's how I got into it. And in naturopathy, there's Jody, there's a lot of competition intellectually. There are a lot of other things you could do that are also really helpful to people. And I would go to conferences, for example, and I would hear some really interesting therapy that might help, and I'd come back all excited and, oh, I'm going to do this. And I'd do it for a month or two. It's like, I don't want to do this. I go back to homeopathy. And the results are so dramatic that I stuck with it.
It's funny that you say that because I will go to conferences too. I mean, I'm a fellow of the Medical Academy of Pediatric Special Needs, and there's a ton of value, and it's important for me whether I'm actively using those therapies or not to understand them so that I can help people, because a lot of people are going to be using them whether I'm the one that's prescribing them or not. And there's for sure times that I've gotten really excited about a certain thing, and then I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so hard. I just give a remedy. Like, you don't need to do all this manipulation of the genes. You just need to give tuberculinum or, whatever it happens to be. And I'm like, why are you making this so hard? So I'm curious about the specifics. If you remember how you actually found out about naturopathic medicine, because you're a bit older than me, and I remember a day when there wasn't the internet. So I'm sure it wasn't the internet
It
that.
was not the internet. We didn't have cell phones yet. Right. So there was a, I was interested in, it was the early 70s. And there was a lot of ferment in the culture, new ideas, new age, it was called, And I was interested in all those things. I was a curious person, And there was a magazine that promoted natural medical things. It was called Prevention. It still exists, but it's not like it used to be. It was a very radical kind of thing. And there was a letter to the editor. I don't remember, I think I know who wrote it, but I don't remember for sure, so I don't want to mention the name. But it was from a naturopathic medical student who was going to National College, which was then in Seattle, that John Bastier was the head of, or was involved in teaching. And writing, it was a whiny letter. It was like, why do you people give money to the regular medical school students? And we naturopathic students don't get any money. You should send us money. It was essentially like that. It was a ridiculous letter. But I thought, wait a minute, what is this? Naturopathic medicine. I somehow looked it up somewhere. I don't know. I went to the library or whatever and saw that it was a profession that used natural means to heal people. And I want to do that. But I didn't know it. I literally, it was my internal unconscious processing that woke me up in the middle of the night and said, oh, yeah, that's what I was going to join the Peace Corps or do something. And it was like, no, this is what I want to do.
I don't know if I've ever told you this, but the way I found out about naturopathic medicine is very similar, in spite of the fact that it happened for me like 30 plus years after the fact. So it might have actually even been prevention. So it was either prevention or not homeopathy today. It was either prevention or vegetarian times, one of the two. I was reading and I saw an article written by an ND, and I said, what is this nonsense? Somebody made up a title so that they could get some sort of credibility. And so then I did go to the internet and I like searched to find out what it was. And I was reading this article when I was taking a break from studying for my MCATs, because I was planning on going to conventional medical school, even though I didn't really want to be a conventional doctor. And I was like, well, I'm just going to have to do this, and then I'm going to have to travel the world to like learn all these other therapies and everything. And then when I looked up what is an ND, and it took me right to SCNM and it said, you know, here's what this is. And I was like, wait a minute, this already exists. I'm trying to cobble this together with like an addition with like 12 years of more school. And there's a thing that already does this. So yeah, it was actually, it was both of us found out about it. Yeah. From a magazine. Mm-hmm. Crazy. All right. So you shared with us a little bit about your history with like teaching and everything. And you obviously, as you shared, were given an award by the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians, in part for your extensive role in teaching homeopathy in several different settings. So what decided, like what brought you to teaching and like bringing it back together? So we know how you got to teaching almost by accident. Then you left for a reason because you didn't feel like it was the right place for you, but maybe teaching was always right. It just wasn't the setting.
Yeah, the high school teaching high school kids biology in the inner city was not.
Yeah.
It was wonderful, but it wasn't what I was meant to do. Yeah, so when I went to school, I became a doctor, and I practiced for, you know, a couple of decades in Oregon. And
maybe that's really where we need to go, is why, what was it that made you decide to leave their practice? And like, whenever you talk about Oregon, you talk about, you get like these like sparkles in your eyes, like, what made you decide to leave your practice in Oregon and move to the desert of all places to teach?
Yeah, and drag my poor wife along with me, who did not want to go.
Yeah.
I have some genetic abnormalities that are in my family. And I literally didn't know how long I was going to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, shockingly, here I am. I also was aware, because I was teaching through the National Center of Homeopathy, among other, you know, I did other things as well,
mm-hmm.
too, where I ran the summer school program. And I was very aware that I had some insight into how to do this that wasn't common knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that it's not there in all the literature, in the homeopathic literature, but people don't do read that stuff so much. I mean,
and even when you do, it can take a lot
to
understand.
There are a few people. It's not like I was the only one by any mm-hmm. means, but not many. And I didn't want that to die with me, you know, and I had these remarkable results. You know, one of the people who works with you used to come down from Portland to sit in with me, you know, and we would see results in patients who, you know, you gave a few stories, you know, you're just not supposed to see
mm-hmm.
that are like ridiculously, like, how could that happen?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we give these little sugar pellets, right? I mean, sometimes we do it in liquid, people are into that, but I would give people these little homeopathic sugar pellets, and some disease of long standing would disappear
mm-hmm.
over a period of time. I was like, how could that be? I'm still don't understand. I mean, I do. I have some ideas about the mechanism of action and all of that that I think are actually quite plausible. But emotionally, it doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was, you know, I thought I didn't want it to, I wanted to teach people. And mm-hmm. and part of it was to accomplish what you guys say I've accomplished, which was really wonderful to hear you say that, which was when I would sit in my office alone with a patient and cure them of something, that was it. Mm-hmm. Almost nobody even saw it. And sometimes this is an art, Jody. And so being an art makes us homeopaths artists. Only the art, a lot of times, is like sequestered away. I mean, nobody gets to see it, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, if I go to teach at this school, all these people are going to see it, and they're going to be inspired, and then they're going to go out and heal so many more people than I ever could by myself. So, there was some politics that was going on at the college. It was going through some dark days. They literally closed the doors
mm-hmm.
for a while. And the last person standing in the administration who who hadn't left was Dr. Mittman, and he and I were really good friends. We taught together at the summer school. I had him teach repertory. I don't know if you knew that.
I
And
didn't.
yeah, no, and he was because he was the last person standing at that time. He became the homeopathic chair, the clinic director, and the interim president. Well, nobody can do that. And he'd been after me to come down and join him anyway. And so he was like, he worked really hard to get me down there.
Yeah.
And it's because of him. So
Yeah.
if you want to, you know, this chain of responsibility for who's responsible for what the wonderful work that you guys have done, you know, it goes back and back.
Yeah.
Right? There's always another link in that chain. He was one of them. If he had done that, I wouldn't have been there, and then you wouldn't have
Yeah.
been able to do that. So
And we did have the honor of being able to honor Paul Mittman last year
oh,
for the
wonderful.
work that he did through
Yeah,
the
that's right.
Homeopathic Academy of Naturopathic Physicians. But you're 100% right. Like, we could go back and back and back, and I'd basically need to like summon Hahnemann's spirit to come and talk to me for really to
Yeah.
like get to the core of it.
Yeah.
I'm curious if you'll indulge me. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the mechanism of action, because I'm sure there's a bunch of listeners who would just like pinged in on that and are like, please, can you tell us?
Oh my gosh, you know, that's a probably a 4-hour lecture, and I will try to make it brief.
Okay.
And I'll have to bring some background in, and you have to excuse me because this is not a simple concept. When we are in, we have to, and we have to understand what we're doing with homeopathy in order to understand how it works. Okay, so when you went to medical school, naturopathic medical school, or if you had gone to conventional medical school, you're trained in a to recognize a series of organizational levels of biology. Okay, and that starts with the lowest one would be the biochemicals, the organic molecules that make life possible. And then the next level up is the little organelles inside the cells, the mitochondria, the lysosomes, the ribosomes, the DNA molecules. Okay. Those are based on the biochemicals. So that's another higher level of organization. And now, if we go up to the next level, we have the cells. So those organelles and cytoplasma of the cell make the cell that, and then above that level are the tissues of the body, the connective tissues, the bony tissues, and neurologic tissues, and so on. And then above the tissues, now we have the tissues make organs. So you have a bunch of different tissues that make the heart, that make the kidney, that make the intestines, that make the brain and the nervous system. Okay. That's another level. And then above those organs, we have the systems. And we're trained in systems, right? We're trained in, you talked about the ologies. You know, you had to take courses in cardiology, which is about the heart and the blood vessels. The pulmonology is about the lungs and the breathing function. Neurology about the nerves and all that. These are the systems, the nervous system, the cardiovascular system. And then we stop.
Yeah.
We stop. You didn't get a, well, you did because you got homeopathy, but generally in our culture, we stop. We don't go to the next level, which is the whole person. The whole person is another level of system. That's above all those other ones. Okay. The founder of homeopathy, Samuel Hahnemann, talked about a very important function of at that level of the whole person in a, unfortunately, it's 200 years ago. So he talked about it in the language of the time. He called it the vital force. But if you read carefully about what he says about this vital force, it has nothing to do with force and not that much to do with vitality. What it has to do is the coordination of all the other parts below it in this hierarchy, working together well. In one of the translations I love, he says it when that vital force is healthy, All the parts of the organism work together in a harmony that obliges
I just
wonderment,
wonderment.
right? It's working together. Yeah. And when the parts of the organism stop working together well, then things don't work well. When the operating system in your computer has a glitch, the programs that rely on the operating system to control a computer start malfunctioning, right? And if you're, you know, when my wife tells me there's a problem, I say, okay, reboot the computer, fix the operating system. If you fix the operating system, your Word program will work fine. Your email program will work fine because the operating system's not working well. But we don't talk about that operating system of the organism, of the person as a whole in medicine. We do in homeopathy. And and Hahnemann proposes that a lot of illnesses are problems at that level of the organism not being able to work to the parts work together well. He says that part, that vital force, it's like it's sick. We can say it's disrupted. You know, it's got a glitch. It's stuck in a rut. And you know, organisms, living organisms have a thing called homeostasis. You remember that. So your blood sugar goes a little bit up, and then we produce a little insulin to make it come down, and then it goes too low, and then we produce something called glucagon, and that releases sugar from the liver, and it makes it go up, and it goes like that, right? Keep it at a stable level, a relatively stable level. So the organism is built to keep things at a stable level. Well, if you're functioning in a disrupted way, that stable level is a disrupted level, is a symptom in the medicine, we would call it, it's a symptomatic level. It's a level where you have symptoms of disease. Because things aren't can't work well. So let's look at it in an infection. You know, if you have a you're invaded by a virus or a bacteria, your immune system is an extraordinarily complex thing. We just still don't understand the majority of it. But all those different parts of the immune system have to work together really well to fight off the infection and then to bring it back down to be, you know, reduce the inflammation and all of that kind of thing. Okay. And when the organism is not working well together, you know, think about a couple or a family, you know, who's not working well together, you know, then you get a problem child, right? And everybody blames it on the poor child becomes the, you know, the problem when really it's everybody's fighting in the family kind of thing. If we can fix that, then everything seems to get better. Homeopathy works by fixing that level of the organism. But it doesn't fix it. It stimulates the natural ability of the body to fix that. And the way it stimulates that is to kick that organism out of this homeostatic dysfunctional rut that it's gotten itself into. So now we have this paradoxical thing of like, what do you mean you're giving me coffee because I can't sleep? What kind of nonsense is that? Are you giving me coffee? Well, yes, I'm giving you coffee because I want to aggravate to a degree. Or give you that information to get you out of that rut of not being able to sleep, right? So I'm gonna increase actually the problem to in an information sense,
right?
Okay, and so the homeopathic medicine is an information packet to tell the organism where it's stuck, and that somehow seems to trigger the organism to be able to jump out of it. Sometimes people get worse before they get better. We call that a therapeutic aggravation. A little bit worse before they get better. That's a good thing because it's getting them out of that rut that they're in. Okay. And so we can do that because, see, the problem with homeopathy was developed 200 years ago, and the founder of homeopathy, Hahnemann, didn't know any of the science we know now.
Right.
He was trying to figure it out. And he comes up with some wacky theories about how homeopathy works to his credit, he says, it doesn't matter. These may be wrong. The facts are that it works.
Right.
He was a true scientist. But now we know from a part of science that's called chaos theory, that very, very small stimuli to very complicated systems, if that system's sensitive to that particular stimuli at just the right time, can trigger enormous changes. And look what we do with homeopathic medicines. We use it's a very, very mild, small stimulus, information packet that's very small. So we don't tend to see side effects, but if that system is sensitive to it, that's when the amazing things can happen. If the system's not sensitive to it, and most people, it's like you're taking nothing, and so your risks of side effects are very low. So that's a brief, very brief description of, I think, how homeopathy works.
We actually have an episode for anybody who wants to get a little bit more on primary and secondary actions, because that's kind of what you were touching in on, with like the primary action and the therapeutic aggravation and the secondary action of the body pushing back against the primary action. So we can put a link to that in the show notes for anybody who wants to go check out that episode about primary and secondary action. But if you take that plus chaos theory, which I'm not smart enough to understand yet, then it's definitely interesting. And we had Iris Bell join us for her work she's done with, as it relates to nanoparticles and complex systems and all of that. And it's really interesting to have heard her talk, and maybe we'll get Alex Tournier on at some point for his theory on how things work. And there was a conference that we attended a couple years ago for the American Institute for Homeopathy, where they actually debated on it. And I feel like the truth could actually, like, their overlap and their differences could potentially be explained by chaos theory from the little bit I understand.
Oh, absolutely. It's the one thing that people don't look. Most people who become homeopaths, and certainly those who become naturopaths, are not really mostly scientists.
Right.
And scientifically interested. They're healers. They're caring people. Right. And it's unusual to have somebody who has enough scientific background to understand what I just tried to very, very briefly express.
And even with my background in physiology and neurobiology, which is part of what it made me such a skeptic of homeopathy to begin with, the physics is where it breaks my brain a little bit, and you have to get into like physics with this. So
So the bottom line is what Hahnemann said: it doesn't matter really to understand how it works. What matters is, does it work? And the answer in the research is absolutely clear, abundantly clear. Yes.
Yeah. That's what I had to get to as well.
Okay.
Dr. Musker, before this interview, I asked our client guide team if they could ask you anything, what they would ask you. And all of them were like, oh my gosh, I'll get to talk to Dr. Messer. And they're like, wait, we don't know. We just want to hear him talk about homeopathy. So can you just like let him go and let him talk about homeopathy? And so I really appreciate, because my background is in nothing. And I really, really appreciate that explanation, because you made that very easy to understand. And
oh, I'm so
very
glad to hear that.
Simplistic. And I reiterate what they say. We could just listen to you talk about homeopathy until the end of time.
It's only useful really for people who are scientifically minded and skeptical. For most people, what gets them into homeopathy is observing the results.
Right. But the reality is, a lot of the people who listen to this podcast there's a lot of people who are in the scientifically minded and skeptical space. We know that we've got some medical doctors who listen. We know that we've got people all over the spectrum. And I think that's in part, like, it helps that, like, I am coming from the space of somebody who was skeptical and still to some degree is, but I can't deny what I see again and again and again
so,
and again.
So yeah, let me, you know, I have to disagree a little bit with that.
Okay.
Because my understanding is, you know, that a lot of the skepticism, part of it, you're right, has to do with lack of understanding, lack of knowledge, you know, kind of, for one thing, Most people don't even know what homeopathy is. They talk about it and they mean natural medicine. They mean, oh, I use homeopathy. Really, what did you take? Oh, I got some echinacea herb at the drugs at the health food store for a cold. Oh, that's not really homeopathy. You know, that's one thing. And secondly, there's a lot of misinformation about homeopathy, about the research in homeopathy, and so on. And we're even scientifically minded people and doctors and all of us, at the end of the day, we're all people. You know, it reminds me of my old lacrosse coach who, you know, we were playing the number three team in the country and we were terrified. And he said, oh no, they put their, you know, that old cliche, they put their pants on one leg at a time. To which I replied, I'm sorry, George. No, I was in their locker room. They have guys who hold their pants and they jump into them from the bench. But anyway, you know, let me tell you a story about a guy. He was an academic specialist, and he had moved from a big academic center to the small Oregon town where I was practicing. And he came to me and he said, to tell you how people get into homeopathy, he said, well, you know, I'm just having a terrible time. I'm on call in my practice. I'm up all night, you know, many days of the week. And then I got this kid. I don't know if I can't remember. He was 6 years old or something. And he just doesn't sleep. And it's gonna kill me. I can't be on call and I can't have this kid who doesn't sleep. And I know I don't believe in homeopathy. You know, I've been trained not to believe in it, but people tell me you could help. So I'm going to try you out. And if you cure him, I'm going to believe in it. So he brings the boy in and I give him a remedy. And, you know, sure enough, in a couple of weeks, the boy's sleeping like a charm. And our MD is doing great, you know, better. He comes in a month later and he says, well, I still don't believe in homeopathy. It's still, maybe that didn't, you know, maybe that's coincidence. But my wife is having horrible premenstrual syndrome. She's into me. It's just really hard. She's really, can you try treating her? Okay, bring her in. It was an easy case. I treated her. Her PMS went away. He said, okay, we're going out to dinner. You know, I'm taking you out to dinner because I have to believe in this now. I can't believe what I've seen. Yeah. And we've seen this with people on shift, the students on shift, who you know, are like, were like you, who were convinced that homeopathy was nonsense until their patients started getting better from things that they weren't supposed to get better from.
So I want to just briefly talk a little bit about like the major work that you've done, like of all the things that you've done. So at school at SC&M, now Sonoran University, you were known for being this like super hard teacher, particularly in clinic. And as you said, people would come to you, and there were people even who were never going to become homeopaths, but they would still come and intentionally be on your shift because of the rigor of medical diagnostics and the workup and everything. So I'm curious if you could talk just a little bit about the importance of the medical understanding when it comes to homeopathy, because so many people think that it's just about the symptoms and that there's the medical understanding isn't as important. So if you could talk a little bit about that, that would be
Well,
really.
knowing medicine is important for a number of reasons. So number one is prognosis, to know, you know, what's the natural course and what's going to happen with this problem somebody has. So somebody has back pain, okay? It's a whole different course of events if they have back pain because they sprained their back lifting something that was too heavy, or they have kidney cancer or pancreatic cancer. Or and a whole nother thing that they have a we call a triple A, you know, aortic aneurysm that's about to pop. Those are, you know, with your sprained back pain, I can give you some homeopathic medicine. If you don't get better in a week, I have another week and I have another week, it's fine. If you know, if you need to be in the hospital and make sure you don't have a burst aneurysm, I don't have weeks, you know, or the same thing if you have a cancer, for example, or you know, so you need to know what it is you're treating, number one, for your knowledge and to be able to advise the patient and manage the case. That's one reason. Number two is you need to be able, when especially when you have to refer the patient out, and of course in a naturopathic setting, we're physicians, we're licensed physicians, we're required to if we don't know what we're doing, we need to refer out to people who do. And to be able to talk to people in the conventional medical world, you need to know the language. You need to know the system. So you need to know what you're talking about. Number three, now this is technical to homeopathy, is the way we decide on a homeopathic medicine is different than the way we decide on a conventional medicine. So for example, if you come to me and say, I'm having headaches, what drug should I take? I can say, okay, well, try some Tylenol first. See if that takes care of your headaches, right? If I'm an allopath or a conventional physician. Because in the conventional medical world, the medication is determined by the diagnosis. Okay. In homeopathy, the diagnosis only gets us to first base. Now we have to distinguish because there are 50 or 60 or maybe probably more headache medicines that can help a headache, and only one, two of them will be helpful for you depending on the rest of the symptoms you have, right? That don't fit in the box. So for example, if you have a headache and you cry because of it, and you always cry when you have your headache, as opposed to you have a headache and you start chewing out your kids and kicking your dog, as opposed to you have a headache and you also have an inordinate craving for sweet things and have to run and eat stuff that don't fit it, that there's nothing about those that are diagnostic of any kind of headache, but they're part of your headache situation. Those symptoms are more important in some ways to decide which of this group of homeopathic medicines I have to consider is the one that's right for you. Right? And if I don't know what everybody with that condition has, I don't know what's unusual and unique in your case. So, for example, if you have a case of multiple sclerosis, we have to I'm sure you heard this when you were a student. The patient comes in and says, oh, I'm much worse in the summer when it's hot. When I get too hot, my MS is much worse. Well, do we use that symptom to help us find a homeopathic remedy? Not really. Why not? Because that's a common symptom in multiple sclerosis. If you don't know that, you're going to be misled by that. Now, if somebody comes in and says, my MS is much worse in the cold, and I love Arizona because when it's 115, my MS is better. That's a symptom I'm going to use. And if I don't know the natural course of MS, I can't prescribe that remedy. So that's a technical reason in homeopathy of why with homeopathy of why the diagnosis is so important. But there's those other ones are equally important.
We talk about that with PANS a lot, but like a hot kid with PANS, I don't really care. Most of them are hot, with their temperature dysregulation. If we got a cold PANS kid, they're getting a cold remedy because,
Remedy that produces coldness in the body. Yeah. Yeah, you're good.
Dr. Messer, let's go back to the skeptics. How do you handle skepticism towards homeopathy?
With love and compassion.
Of course.
Yeah, no, seriously. If somebody is misled and going and unable to do something that's good for them, are you angry at them? Do you want to, prove them wrong? I mean, sure, we have those impulses, but I have to understand that they've been misled. They didn't do that. For a lot of the some of the skeptics, they haven't done their homework. People will tell me, oh, I don't believe in homeopathy. The research is not there. I said, well, 1600 clinical trials, last time I checked, the majority of them have positive results. Have you looked at any of them actually, the actual studies? No, not really. So there's that. Like I talked about, I think the best way to to influence people is by demonstration. And so when I came to the school to teach, there were different ideas about using homeopathy, whether or not using it, and because it doesn't work or something, it's nonsense. And I made a very conscious decision that I wasn't going to make anybody bad. You know, all my colleagues there, you had something to the students, you had something to learn from them. You know, whether they did it the way I do it or not, that doesn't matter. You learn from them. We're not going to be disrespectful. And that made it much easier to be able to demonstrate things to people, to the other colleagues who referred patients or had patients that we shared, and to the students. So we had a student, you know, I won't pick on you because we know your story, but there was a one student, I don't think you knew her. That woman from, I'm spacing on her name, which I shouldn't mention anyway. Anyway, there was a woman who came and like you, she, when the naturopathic students come to the, into the program, there's a, this orientation thing that happens, and they stand up and they say why they're there. And this woman literally said, I'm a scientist and I came because I heard that homeopathy was part of naturopathy and I want to prove that it's baloney. But to her credit, she was a true scientist. Okay. And she came in her senior year, or maybe it was the year before, the last quarter before her senior year, she came to shift. And as expected, every patient who got better because of what got better, according to her, because of some other trivial thing that they changed, you know, they start tying their shoelaces better. So the headaches, you know, you can rationalize this stuff anyway, you know, because we have a thing called cognitive dissonance.
Mm-hmm.
Cognitive dissonance is if in most human beings, if I can pressure you with information that shows that your deeply held belief is actually incorrect, we, as human beings, we tend to go back and get more attached to our wrong belief.
Yep.
You know, this is well understood in psychology. It's silly, but it's how we're built. I don't know. We, you know, we all have it. And so she had to deal with that. She knew homeopathy didn't work. So therefore she found the reasons why the first quarter. After a bit, she was there so many times. She came because she was intrigued, and she was, to her credit, she was willing to observe. And I'll never forget this incident. She got to the point where it was her turn to take the case, to be the primary student in the case with this patient. And it was a patient who had grown up in Mexico, a middle-aged woman who had been horribly traumatized in her childhood, and had PTSD and just couldn't sleep. Hadn't slept in decades, maybe 3 or 4 hours a night because of her trauma. And our patient took the case, our student took the case, and we did it in two parts then, you know, the medical part first and then the homeopathic additional information. And we all studied it, and it was very clear it was, she needed a homeopathic medicine called Natrumur. And we gave her Natrumur. And then 3 weeks later, the woman came back, and our skeptic, and it's your question you asked, Jody, our skeptic went in to do the follow-up. And we had a thing when we went around the room and talked about what happened, where the last person to speak before the residents and myself about what we thought was happening in the follow-up, and everybody spoke, was the primary student on that case, which was this young woman. And everybody went around and said, well, she clearly, it was the correct homeopathic medicine. She's sleeping now for the first time in decades. She's better, she's happier, her energy's better. We get to the around to this woman, you know, almost a little bit waiting to hear, you know, what she trivial thing she thinks she did. She started to speak. She broke down, started sobbing, and said, she's better. I can't believe it. I love homeopathy. And became completely, you know, committed to it from that time on.
Yeah.
So, you look at somebody who's a skeptic of homeopathy, and they're a potential friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, you're basically describing what happened with Constantine Hering too, right? Constantine Hering came to homeopathy because he was working to disprove it, and he ended up being the founder of, like, basically brought homeopathy to America.
United States, yeah.
So we would need to go back to Constantine Hering, who was, some people have their opinions about him one way or the other, but either way, like, we'd have to bring him to this podcast too, because none of us would be here if it weren't for Constantine Hering. And
Oh, true.
there's some value in skepticism too, because, like, some skeptics can become people who
No,
end up.
I would always encourage people to be skeptical.
Yeah.
That means you're being rigorous. I would be much more not as happy with students who come in, oh, homeopathy, I love it, blah, blah, blah. It, why? Have you thought through it? Because you have to really think about it.
Yeah.
You have to be a little bit hard-nosed, and taking a case and prescribing for patients. So I hope that answers your question, Jody.
It does. And it's neat because I would imagine that one of the blessings of all of the work that you've done and your dedication to homeopathy is witnessing this over and over again.
Oh
And
yeah. It's wonderful, really. Yeah.
awesome. Very cool. So tell us about how homeopathy has evolved since you first came to it.
Oh, the word evolve has different meanings. If you mean how's it changed, or if you mean how's it gotten better, right? I mean, in Darwin and evolution, things are getting better and better, mostly, I think. More complex, more, yeah. I think homeopathy to some degree has devolved. Aside, not what you guys are doing, but what a lot of what goes for homeopathy is not real homeopathy, in my opinion. People use that word because it's, I don't know why, it's cool or something. And
Well, they use it to mean using dilute doses of things. They don't use it to mean the application of the law of similars.
they use homeopathic medicines, but they don't use it in the way that Hahnemann prescribed homeopathy to be, which is this like cures like business, which we haven't really talked about, but we did a little bit. They do other stuff. It's more poetic, imagination. One of our teachers, a fellow named Demetriades from South Pacific, who has influenced a lot of our prescribers, very scholarly fellow. He calls it imaginopathy. So homeopathy is in a bad place, really. There's not a lot of really very serious homeopathy being taught in the United States. That's not true around the world. Around the world, homeopathy is number one alternative medicine system, or number two, I don't know, more than acupuncture, I think so, in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just really important for people who might be considering studying homeopathy, which I know there's a lot of people in our community that have become so they've seen the power of it and that they want to learn more and everything. It is
Sure.
important to have discernment, especially if you're going to, like, a just a homeopathy program, not like a
Right.
naturopathic medical school that teaches homeopathy as well, because yeah, it's there's a lot of people are using the word homeopathy to describe something that Hahnemann himself would not recognize as homeopathy.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
So, I think this program that Aleister Gray and his wife have is a reasonable program for people. Yeah, that's what I hear. I don't know enough.
Right.
What do you see for the future of homeopathy in healthcare?
In healthcare in the United States, I don't know. I worry about it. I worry that it could be. I mean, part of why you asked me early on why I went to teach. I mean, I worried that it would be lost, and so it's kind of on the edge. These folks that I trained, are remarkable. They're amazing. And what you guys are doing is just astounding to demonstrate what homeopathy can do. So maybe they, can make a big difference and homeopathy can, flourish. But I don't know. It's hard to train people. It's a lot of commitment and work and knowledge, and I don't see it becoming mainstream anytime soon. And the problem would be if it did, that it would be diluted. That's a concern that I've always had.
Diluted meaning like the challenge that she brought up before, that the imaginopathy, as you and George Dimitriadis call it.
There's an old, I worry sometimes when homeopathy people are so interested in making public, make homeopathy more of a lot of PR about it to promote it, there's an old saying in advertising that good advertising is the worst thing for a bad product. To get people excited about it, they try it, it doesn't work, it doesn't help, and now they know it doesn't work and they give up on it.
That is probably one of my biggest concerns about, we've got we hear from our community that there are some people who see benefit in these other forms of, what people are calling homeopathy, that, like, I mean, if it works for people, fantastic. Our biggest issue is that, like, calling it homeopathy is confusing it with what is actually homeopathy, right? And I think that that's one of the biggest challenges, is if we expect a certain outcome because of 200 plus years of consistent application of a system of medicine, but then somebody's calling it the same thing, but it's not. And, like, some of these types of homeopathy are from things people made up on their own, like that they, like they're the person who thought of how to do this approach, right? And if they don't have the same outcome, then they just think homeopathy doesn't work, when they don't realize that it's not actually what.
And one of the problems is that people are not aware of how powerful placebo is, and so a lot of what you have to do the hard scientific research to show that homeopathy, real homeopathy, is something more than just placebo, because we all everybody allopathic physicians, everybody gets placebo results. So
Everybody.
you know this, Jody, but if I do a placebo surgery on your knee, I'll have better results long term than if I actually do the actual surgery. Placebo is really powerful. So a lot of this other stuff gets a certain level, a certain percentage of improvements, and then they think it's from the homeopathy, the quote homeopathy. But the reason you can tell the difference is, you think back about the results we had on the clinic. Percentage of people got better. It was in the 90% range, and that's more than you would see with placebo. And then the research is there, where you give somebody an actual placebo, and then you give them the homeopathic treatment, and they get better more than just the placebo would.
I'm going to go backwards to the homeopathy and healthcare, because I'm a dreamer for homeopathy. I'm a huge dreamer, and I have these things that I just hope, I can't stop hoping and wishing for. And well before PANS came into our lives, my younger daughter is very medically complex, and we were so blessed to have come across an oncologist hematologist who's followed her for many, many years. And he had his training was in India, and he would always tell me stories about how he was trained in homeopathy along with all of his mainstream medical. And he would tell me these stories about the blending of the two and how much he desired to use homeopathy in his own oncology patients here, but he wasn't able to do that. So I just have this really, like, big, huge hopes and wishes for somehow finding this blend of putting these two things together. And I feel like on a small level, in the short time that, you know, in the six, how many ever years that I've been with Resilience, that we have started to see this, these shifts in that direction. Number one, with all of the families that are finally learning about homeopathy and open and wanting to, you know, hear more, learn more. But then it's not just that. We're also seeing so many providers that are starting to ask questions and starting, I can't tell you how many nurses I've spoken to that are like, what do I do now? Like, I have this knowledge. What do I do? Somehow, all of these moms and dads that are experiencing, and I feel like it's just somehow there's a blend in there. It's got to be.
I hope you're right.
That's what I want.
I hope you're
and
right.
And from my perspective, just seeing the shift in demand and seeing how these, the parents in the PANS community, they can move mountains. They really can, because there's not good answers for their kids. And when they find an answer in homeopathy and they take it to their providers who weren't helping them, we're getting now lots of conventional medical providers who are like, there might be something to this. And now referring people to us, their hardest cases, because they're like, I don't really understand how this works, but it's helped a lot of people that I've worked with. And we went from, when I first started going through MAPS training, getting the sideways glances when I told people I was primarily a homeopath, to being invited to speak at it. And now, like being asked to submit abstracts about it. And more people are even mentioning it. Like they're saying, I'm not doing this because I'm not skilled in this, but you need to send somebody to a homeopath in these cases. So there is movement happening. And if it's going to come from anywhere, it's going to come from the PANS community, because this is a community that absolutely moves mountains. So,
well, that's wonderful.
All right. One last question for you.
Okay.
Of all of the things that you've done, what are you most proud of?
Well, I'm sure you know the answer to that. What do you think I'm going to say?
Well, the students that you've
the
trained.
Students.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. People would ask me, you know, when are you going to write a book? And I say that these people are the book I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
That you guys can do this, and that you can pass it on, and then you can train other people. I mean, look what you've done here. You know, all the people you've had, Jen, who, you know, were not knowing how or who to help, and you know, you've molded them into a group that's making these huge changes. And yeah. That's clearly what I'm most proud of. Yeah. I mean, a professional level. I mean, I have two wonderful sons, and
of course
I have a new granddaughter.
Oh, you do?
She's just 1 year old, and she is the love of our life. And, you know, I just can't get enough of her. And so I'm, you know, I'm really proud of that stuff too, but on a professional level. Yeah. My students.
So it was worth leaving Oregon to come to the desert to teach everybody.
It was.
Yeah,
it was. It was a sacrifice. I mean, you know, we had a really pleasant life there, and a lot of good friends who are still really good friends who we don't get to see often enough.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was clearly worth it. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad that you made that decision, because, like I said at the beginning, all of the good things I have in my life, I wouldn't have if it weren't for the work that you did. So
yeah, well,
thank
that's,
you.
That was wonderful, and thank you for gathering those words from the, you know, the other docs. That meant a lot.
Well, I again have to reiterate the gratitude from the many, many families who are reaping the benefits of your work and your effort. I feel like I see all of these seeds that you planted, and it's not just, oh, these seeds bloomed. I feel like these seeds are giant trees, and their branches are literally reaching across the world. And I'm one person, but my PANS daughter and even my younger daughter, they get to have just a normal life, a healthy life.
So
they
wonderful.
they they get to be free of pain and suffering because of all of the work that you did. And I am just one. There are so many of us. So just we're eternally grateful for you waking up in the middle of the night and just knowing what you were supposed to do and then leaning into that for so many years and doing all that hard work. It's I wish we could all give you a great big hug.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jody. It's wonderful to hear.
Are there any final thoughts that you feel like you really want to share about homeopathy or life, anything?
No, except that, I am as touched as I am by all that gratitude. I mean, in my mind, I keep seeing that chain, the people who taught me and the people who taught them, the people who worked on this method of healing. And, we owe such a huge gratitude to all of them. One of the most meaningful, it was interesting, one of the most meaningful things in my professional career was, you mentioned it, you talked about when you introduced me, but it just was words to you. But you said, oh, I won the Henry Williams professional something award from the NCH. Well, Henry Williams was one of my mentors, one of my important mentors, a wonderful, wonderful man, wonderful physician. It was the kind of thing that some of you, I think, have experienced where when he finally retired, he said to me, oh, you can call me Hal now. And I said, I can't.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah, and you will always be Dr. Messer.
And then I was on the board of the NCH and we decided to create this award. And I said, well, let's call it the Henry Williams Award. You know, it's, he had run the NCH summer school for years and as well as other things. And they said, okay. And then I find out I get the first one. And it was just the most moving thing.
Yeah.
To be, because it's, this is, it's this, it goes back and back and back. We're all indebted to people before us. We all stand on the shoulders of giants.
You read my mind. We all are standing on the shoulders of giants who came before us. And every single one of them can say that they made a difference in this world. And you are among those people who you can say for sure that the world is a better place because you lived. And you can rest. You can rest now. You've done a lot of work. So you can rest.
Thank you.
We got it.
Wonderful.
We'll take
to see
it from
you
here.
Guys.
Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Messer. We're so grateful for
You're
you.
You're welcome. Okay, edit
All right.
this well.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Okay,
bye.
Bye-bye.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We try to get a new episode out every week. You can make sure you don't miss any by following us on Spotify or subscribing to our channel on YouTube. If you want to connect with us more, join our Facebook group, Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas, where we have exclusive weekly videos and answer your questions about, you guessed it, homeopathy for Pans and Pandas throughout the week. If you are already a member, give us a shout out and let us know what you thought about this episode. If you aren't on Facebook and would like to reach us, you can email us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com. Until next time, take care and remember, this won't be forever.